Good morning. It's good to be together today. That includes those of you joining us over the magical airwaves or transmissions or however that works on the internet. Just in case anyone out there or out there doesn't know, my name is Joe. My pronouns are he and him. And apparently I'm a thought trapper. If I set any traps for your thoughts today, I hope that they are not the steel trap kind, but the kind and humane ones that capture you here and then take you outside these walls and release you into your freedom. Before we dive into this story of Hosea and Gomer, just a heads up, there is a lot of difficult stuff in this story. It might feel pretty raw and tender to some of us, especially around relationships and sexuality and shame. So if this story is impacting you, please be kind to yourself, take care of each other. If you need to go somewhere else for a while, that is entirely fine. If you'd like to talk to someone after the service, Eileen or I or one of our pastoral team volunteers would be glad to find a quiet place to talk with you. The word of the Lord came to Hosea, son of Beeri, "Go marry a prostitute. Choose a prostitute as the mother of your children." Okay, God. What would you do with that invitation? Well, yes, mother, I know you've heard some things about Gomer, but she's the one. God said so. I have to acknowledge that there is more than a bit of creative license required by this story. The narrative is quite heavy on symbolism and poetry, and not so much about the details of the actual people involved. For instance, we don't actually know that Gomer is a prostitute. The literal translation is something like, "Go take for yourself a wife of fornication." In the cultural context where a woman's literal monetary value was tied to her sexual purity, that might be a woman who received payment for sex. Or it might be a woman who was divorced, or someone who had cheated on a husband, or a young woman who had been raped or lost her virginity for any reason. A little bit later in the story, there is a payment involved, and so that may or may not imply that Gomer was involved in prostitution, but we really don't know. What is clear from the writing is that whatever happened with Gomer, she bore the shame of it alone. This relationship between Hosea and Gomer would be easily recognized as unequal. Everyone would know instantly that this woman did not deserve to be loved by a good man like Hosea. We will talk more about the misogyny of the story later. That was the whole point of the prophecy. Just as Gomer did not deserve Hosea, so the people of Israel did not deserve the love of God. For the land is guilty of that most hideous kind of prostitution, or adultery, or impurity. Israel had betrayed its relationship with God and had lost its value. The backstory is fascinating, although not all that relevant to the book itself. But you look curious, so I will tell you anyway. A few decades back, there had been a chaotic coup among the royal houses of the northern tribes of Israel. Very much Game of Thrones kind of stuff. The short version is that the notorious Queen Mother Jezebel and her son, King Jehoram, were killed by their royal cousin, Jehu. And then Jehu invited the rest of the family, a whole bunch of their supporters, come and swear allegiance to the new regime in the capital city of Jezreel. When they got there, he lured them all into the temple. "We're going to worship together." And he locked the doors, sent in the soldiers to slaughter them all. Bloody stuff. Now, the interesting thing is that when this story is told in the Bible book of 2 Kings, Yahweh is firmly on the side of Jehu. He's the good guy, the restoring conqueror. Jezebel and her husband, King Ahab, are the clear villains. They are infamous for their corruption and in their worship of false gods. To bring down their evil reign, the prophets of Yahweh, Elijah and Elisha, chose Jehu. The slaughter of the family of Jezebel and her supporters, it was justified because, according to 2 Kings, Yahweh had to stamp out these corrupt leaders and their false religion. But here in the book of Hosea, we get the opposite perspective. The prophet of Yahweh is on the other side. Actually, he says Jehu was acting against Yahweh. Jehu was the idol worshiper. Jehu was the one who rebelled against Yahweh and slaughtered the true king of Israel and the royal house of Israel. It's interesting how these two different perspectives on whose side has a claim to God, these both made their way into the sacred scriptures of Judaism. I will leave it to you to decide what that means. Anyway, for today's purposes, according to Hosea, three generations later, God was about to bring judgment against the house of Jehu for this betrayal. To teach this lesson in a very committed piece of performance art, Hosea married Gomer and had children with her. Their first child, God named Jezreel. Jezreel was the place where Jehu had killed all those people. So the name Jezreel was a promise that God was about to take revenge on the current king, the house of Jehu. Imagine wearing that name to the first day of kindergarten. Welcome to class, Aiden and Braden and Caden and Insurrection. That was Jezreel. His two siblings had it even worse. The second born, a daughter, was named Lo Rahema. We have a Rahema in our church, a name that means mercy, forgiveness, and compassion, which is lovely, unless you put that prefix Lo in front of it. Lo means not, not mercy, not forgiveness, not compassion. And then the youngest, another son, who God named Lo Ami. Ami meaning my people, so Lo Ami, not my people. What a family. Hey mom, can we invite the new neighbors over for dinner sometime? Sure, have you met them? What are their names? Well, there's Insurrection, there's No Mercy, and Not My People. Maybe let's give them a chance to settle in a little bit before we bother them. But that was the point of the story. Just as this family would be rejected, so Yahweh was rejecting the nation of Israel, for they had rejected God. Hope you all enjoyed that story. Have a great week. I'll see you next Sunday. As readers, we are supposed to be disgusted by the unfaithful Gomer. She is repulsive in her guilt. She has lost her value. She is unworthy of her husband's love. There's no compassion for the prostitute. There's no mercy for Gomer. She's not mine. She does not belong. Some of you know that kind of shame. Some of you have had that weaponized against you. Maybe you've internalized it against yourself. I'm so sorry that you had to hear that. Please, there is more to this story. Keep listening. Gomer is not mine. She does not belong. That's how everyone saw her, everyone except Hosea. Just when the unseen audience members are getting into the story, when you can feel the power of their hatred for Gomer rising, we can see them reach for their first stone, they're about to cast it, there the story turns. This is chapter 2, this is poetry, a love song from Yahweh to Israel, echoed by the love of Hosea for Gomer. On that day, however, I will woo her. I will lead her into the desert, speaking tenderly to her heart. I will return her vineyards and change a valley of trouble into a gateway of hope. Then she will sing as she did when she was young, as she did at the time when she came out of Egypt. On that day, says Yahweh, you will call me Ishi, my spouse. You will no longer call me Baali, my superior. I will bind myself to you in love forever. Yes, I will swear myself to you in rightness and justice, in tender love and in deep compassion. I will swear myself to you in love and faithfulness, and then you will truly know Yahweh. I will plant Jezreel in the earth for myself. I will cherish the one I called no compassion. I will say to Lo Ami, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. The expectations of the audience have been undone. The reversal is complete. Gomer had no worth in their eyes, but here she has all of it. You will no longer call me superior or master. You will call me Ishi, my spouse. Everyone else sees this as an unequal relationship, Hosea and his prostitute wife. But Hosea sees Gomer, her true value. He sees them as equals, as partners, belonging to each other. And that is all that matters. Instead of judgment for her betrayal, instead of revenge for the hurt that she caused, Hosea responds with his own faithfulness, his own commitment. Mercy is the way forward. And that's the larger message of the prophecy, that God will give mercy to Israel for their failures. God will meet their unfaithfulness with faithfulness, and that will bring healing for everyone. But nobody rides off happily into a happily ever after in this story. Something significant happened off screen between chapters 2 and 3, and now Hosea and Gomer are separated again. Again, we don't know what happened. Perhaps it was a divorce, perhaps some kind of breakdown or relapse, perhaps even something as violent as poverty forcing Gomer to sell herself into sexual slavery for the sake of her children. The details of the story aren't included. We're just told that God speaks to Hosea again, tells him to go after Gomer again, even though she is now loved by another lover. It's not clear if that's a euphemism for something sinister, but this time Hosea has to pay a ransom to get her back. And again, there's a lot left unsaid about whether Gomer's extramarital activity was forced or voluntary, but apparently the ransom did whatever it was it needed to do. Hosea and Gomer come back together, they are reunited, and she no longer has to play the harlot, whatever we want to make of that. And they pledge to be faithful to each other moving forward. As before, this is all intentionally symbolic, that Hosea will love her the same way Yahweh loves Israel, even though they worship other gods. And that's the end of the narrative. The rest of the book of Hosea is poetry. It's more of the back and forth of how hurt and angry Yahweh is at Israel's betrayal, countered by Yahweh's commitment to forgiveness and mercy and wholeness. I will heal their rebelliousness and love them freely, for my anger against them has subsided. I will be as the morning dew for Israel, and they will bloom like the lily. And then they all live happily ever after. Actually, not so much. A few generations later, the northern kingdom of Israel was conquered and swallowed up by the Assyrian Empire. History is unclear about what happened to those lost tribes. This is not a fairy tale. If you do find this story of Hosea and Gomer compelling, you might enjoy the fictionalized version called Redeeming Love by Francine Rivers. We have it in our church library. Francine Rivers sets the story of Hosea and Gomer in the middle of the California Gold Rush. It's been a long time since I read it, but I recall that it's pretty spicy for a church library book, which is probably why I picked it up in the first place. Anyway, this whole thing is quite a story. I said we would talk about misogyny, the bias against women in the story and in the culture it comes from. For one, the story makes assumptions. It's quick to assume, to condemn the prostitute or adulterer, and it makes no mention of their partners, no critique of the circumstances that led Gomer to sell her body in that way. For two, the story positions Gomer as the harlot and Hosea as the white knight riding in to save her, without noting that Hosea, perhaps more than anyone, is using Gomer for his own purposes. Look, everybody, watch while I marry this sinner, save her with my love, and then use our marriage and our children as a sermon illustration. Call that what you want, it's not love. Zoom that out a bit further. And apparently God is the puppet master here, using both Hosea and Gomer to make his point. I ask the question, is that who God is? Does God use people in that way? Or is there a better way to understand God and Scripture, a way that honors people and does not take advantage of the most vulnerable among us? These are not questions raised by the original story. Those questions weren't even on the radar 2,800 years ago. But they are on our radar now, so let's listen and learn. As flawed as this story might be, even with those flaws, are an invitation for a better understanding of God and of ourselves. And once again, as we've seen throughout this series, our scriptures are far wider than we might expect. Throughout the last month, we've been paying attention to the diversity of the Bible, how God includes and often centers the stories and voices that those of us in the mainstream of society tend to overlook. This would have been a scandalous tale to its first audience. I've been very careful in my words to describe Gomer's occupation and reputation this morning. You know the other words that people use to talk about someone who makes these kind of choices, has this kind of occupation. You know how offensive they are, right up there with the worst things that you might call someone today. Things were the same, perhaps even worse, actually definitely even worse in the culture of ancient Israel. People were stoned for making those choices. There is no overstating the shame and scandal of this story. And yet, here it is. This is in our sacred scriptures. Gomer is not rejected. She is not killed. God does not condemn her. She is not out in any way. She is in. She is included all the way. Sex worker or not, unfaithful partner or strong survivor, Gomer's story is God's story. Gomer is not alone in the Bible either. Rahab is a sex worker. She hides a group of spies, of the spies of Israel, when they just happen to find themselves trapped in her apartment. When her city of Jericho is destroyed, Rahab and her family are saved because of her hospitality. Rahab is one of the heroes of God's story. Tamar is a sex worker of sorts. Perhaps it's a one-time thing, but she poses as a prostitute to trap her father-in-law, and he is all too happy to avail himself of her services. The resulting child makes Tamar the ancestor of King David, given a place of honor in the story. Queen Esther is a sex worker. She is chosen for the emperor's harem. More accurately, she is coached and offered up by her cousin/pimp, Mordecai, who saw her beauty as a path to power for them both. And it worked, so yay, Queen Esther. We celebrate her. Jesus' friend Mary Magdalene is often described as a prostitute, although there's no evidence of that. There is, however, the woman of sin who washes Jesus' feet with her tears and rubs them with expensive perfume. Maybe she was a sex worker, maybe not, but the implication is that something dirty, something scandalous is happening. It was certainly offensive to Jesus' critics. There are other stories, other women who are used or offered for sex, willingly or otherwise, such as the many wives and concubines of King David and King Solomon, the daughters of Lot. While extramarital sex was highly taboo, there are plenty of compromising situations in the Bible, like Ruth hiding in Boaz's bed, or Jael offering to hide a general in her tent before murdering him in his sleep. All of these are part of the story. All of this to say, sex workers are God's people. It's not a world which I am familiar with myself. I have emotions and thoughts and feelings and opinions about sex work. But that doesn't mean that these people are separate or other. Sex workers are part of God's story. They're part of God's people, the same as I want to be. That isn't the whole story, but let's start there. Rather than my discomfort putting them somewhere else, nope, they are part of us. There's a whole lot more that could be said about this story and about sex work in general. There's a lot we can learn about the condition under which these women and men and transgender and two-spirit people live and make their living. There's a whole lot to consider about the politics and economics and misogyny and gender dynamics and morality and injustice of it all. Nothing about sex work is simple. I do think there's a bottom line here, though, from God's perspective. From Hosea chapter 2, the voice of God, "I will bind myself to you in love forever. I will bind myself to you in rightness and justice, in tender love and in deep compassion. I will swear myself to you in love and faithfulness, and you will truly know God." Graham, you were right to welcome us to a ceremony this morning. This is the words of a wedding. These are the words of marriage. Literally, "I will betroth myself to you. I will marry you." God is married to these sex workers. And all people, But in light of Gomer's story, God has specifically bound himself, herself, to these people. These people that so often receive scorn or pity or judgment or abuse or offers of rescue, God is bound to them. God has chosen to share their fate. God is that committed to their well-being. What about us? We Christians have plenty of moral judgments to make about them as well. But what if instead of our thoughts and opinions, what if instead we begin with this same commitment? We are bound together, you and I. We are married to you. You are part of me. What would happen if we start with that? I know that's idealistic. I haven't worked out what it means, what it looks like. I don't even know where to begin. But that's the question that I'm going to carry with me from this story of Hosea and Gomer. And I hope that it gets stuck on you as well. Maybe that's a trap, maybe not. I hope it gets stuck. And the flip side of that, I also hope gets stuck. It's also important, no doubt equally important, is recognizing that just as God, we've been talking about God being married to sex workers, this is how God holds each of us as well. I will bind myself to you in love forever. Doesn't matter what you've done. Doesn't matter what you carry with you. Doesn't matter what choices you will make in the future. God is bound to you. That is who God is. That is the way to know who you truly are as well. You are beloved. You are the spouse of God. May you know this day that you are loved, that God holds your worth, that nothing can touch it, that nothing you or anyone else can do can separate you from the love of God. From that foundation of love, may you also go and marry a prostitute, or at least may you know and lean into the threads that bind us to them, the spirit that holds all of us together in love and health and wholeness. May it be.